Not yet. Oh, good morning. Good morning. So this morning we will go into the second phase of the shamatha without a sign, or awareness of awarenesses taught by Padmasambhava. And you may recall from the earlier round where we touched on this particular phase of the practice, that here Padmasambhava says, by doing this method, you may actually realize rikpa. So I'd like to talk about it just for a few minutes, because I think there's a lot of confusion around this, a lot of muddling or confusion, fusing things together, and so I'll try to distinguish them clearly. As we'll see very shortly when we go into the practice, this entails not simply a settling of awareness, just a placing of awareness, but actually a probing into the very nature of that which is aware, and then even more pointedly, a probing into the nature of that which is inverting and releasing the awareness. And then the question is posed, what is that? If you think it's the mind, then what is the very nature of the mind that is releasing and inverting the attention? So this is definitely crossing the threshold. If I were a king of Vipassana and the adjacent kingdom of Shamatha, I would say, you're encroaching in my territory, right? This is definitely crossing the boundary when we're starting to pose this type of question. What is the very nature? What is the very nature? Now, remember the context of the practice. It's called shamatha without a sign. So the practice is being billed, so to speak, being advertised or presented as a shamatha practice. We all know what that's for. It's in order to achieve shamatha, and in so doing, your mind settles in the substrate consciousness, or the continuum of mental consciousness. There we are. And that, Pendzen Rinpoche, the tutor of the fifth Dalai Lama, Pendzen Rinpoche says, when you do this, and he teaches the same method, not all these variations, but he goes right to the same method. This is common to Mahamudra and to Dzogchen, and the Gelugpa tradition also has Mahamudra. He says, and now you realize the essential nature of the mind. Semgingwo. Now you realize the essential nature of the mind. And he adds, that is the conventional nature of the mind. What is the conventional nature, conventional or relative nature of the mind? What is that? It is Selching Rigpa, luminous and cognizant. What are you aware of when you're resting in this substrate consciousness or this subtle continual mental awareness? What are you aware of? Well, you know, you're aware of the substrate. What is that substrate? It's empty. It's luminous because it's being illuminated by your own awareness. Say, okay, I've realized the nature of the mind, the essential nature of the mind, and it is luminous, it's cognizant. The word cognizant mind, by the way, Selching Rigpa. Rigpa is the word for cognizant. So the one word, and this is commonly known in the Tibetan tradition, one word, Rigpa, refers to the relative nature of awareness. And then in the Dzogchen context, it's referring to innate mind of clear light, primordial consciousness. One word, but now used in two different ways. Both of those are essential nature of the mind, but one is conventional, one is relative. So this is presented as a shamatha method, and by succeeding, by going into the very nature of that, swinging the pendulum inwards, in upon that which is releasing and contracting the mind, you may then achieve shamatha and realize the essential nature of the mind, which is the substrate consciousness, on a conventional level. At the same time, he says, you may actually realize rikpa. And now this is a Dzogchen text, so you know he's not talking in the context of Buddhist psychology. So he's talking about you may actually penetrate through to pristine awareness, primordial consciousness. Because of this penetration, you're not just placing, but you're penetrating through, you're really probing into. Well, we can, now, how much do you realize? And this depends exactly on how little dust there is on your eyes, to use a traditional Buddhist metaphor. Or, okarasabane, wombo, karasa, dupo dan, wombo, numbo. How dull or sharp are your faculties? And so as you're probing into the very nature of what? That which is controlling the mind, as you're probing in there very precisely in this kind of more of a Vipassana mode, you may realize a degree of a quality or a facet of reality of identitylessness, of anatman, that is common to the Theravada tradition, to the Vaibhashika tradition, Satrantika tradition, the Shravakayana, and that is the absence, the very emptiness of what is called in Tibetan Rangkyo Tupa Zeyoki Da. Rangkyo Tupa means an autonomous, a self-supporting, Zeyu, substantial self. And that is specifically what's being refuted here, is a self that is autonomous, that's in charge. That's in charge. That I'm in charge of my body. I say hand go up, my hand goes up, hand go down, my hand goes down. A separate autonomous self that is in charge of the body and in charge of the mind. Some separate entity, an ego. That's exactly what's refuted in the Theravada tradition, the Vaibhashika, the Satrantika. That is a level of identitylessness. From the Madhyamika perspective, that's called coarse identitylessness. It's a Vipassana style insight, but it's not the full realization of emptiness. But imagine that you had even sharper faculty to, as you're probing inwards right in upon the very nature of the mind, as something, is there really some mind in here that is self-existent, that is other than appearances, other than objects, that is a self-existent, inherently existent mind in here, independent of conceptual designation. And as you're probing inwards right in upon that experience, that sense of there being a mind in here that is inherently existent, you may penetrate through that fiction, if you are very sharp faculties, you may penetrate through that fiction and realize the empty nature of your own mind, the shunya nature of your own mind, which means you've apprehended emptiness. And in the Mahamudra tradition, it is stated, Kama Chakmet, for example, states this in A Spacious Path to Freedom. He said, if you've realized the emptiness, the ultimate nature, now not the conventional nature, the ultimate nature, the shunya nature of your own mind, then it's relatively easy to realize the empty nature of all phenomena. Now this quality of emptiness is also taught by the Buddha in the Pali Canon, but it's not elaborated so much, but it is there. When the Buddha speaks of the conventional nature of phenomena, that all phenomena are like a chariot that exists only by the power of conceptual designation, by labeling, but does not already exist from its own side independently of labeling. It's there in the Pali Canon. And it's elaborated, systematized, clarified in the Madhyamaka view. So if you have very little dust on your eyes doing this simple practice, who knows? You may penetrate right to the nature of the mind. But now it's not referring to the conventional nature, it's referring to the ultimate nature. And that's going to the root delusion that is at the root of all mental afflictions. But Padmasambhava doesn't stop there. He says, by doing this simple practice, you may penetrate right through to Rikpa, which is what we call the emptiness of the mind, ultimate nature of the mind. What should we call this? Well, we can call it primordial consciousness. It is nature of mind on an utterly transcendent level beyond all conceptual elaboration, breaking through the subtle continuum of mental consciousness to the innate mind of clear light. So I think we have to have ultimate, or something like that, because it's very clear in the Gelugpa traditions, as well as other traditions, that realizing the emptiness of the mind is not the same as realizing the innate mind of clear light. Perfectly clear. If you've realized Rikpa, if you realize now Rikpa in this Dzogchen sense of the term, the innate mind of the clear light, then you have necessarily realized emptiness. If you realize the empty nature of the mind, you've not necessarily realized Rikpa, or the innate mind of clear light. I'd like to conclude with giving an analogy to try to make this clear. But you can see all three of those levels can be called nature of mind. The substrate consciousness, nature of mind. Luminous, of the nature of Rikpa, cognizant, empty. Or you may tap into a coarse level of identitylessness and realize that, or you may tap into the ultimate nature of the mind, empty nature of the mind, or you may tap into Rikpa itself. All depends on how sharp are your faculties. One simple practice may do multiple duties. So let's take this analogy and then we'll jump into the practice. Imagine that you're in the midst of a non-lucid dream, which is to say, imagine you're dreaming and you don't know you're dreaming. Imagine it's a long dream, really long. And in the midst of this dream, after some time you develop a pretty strong renunciation and you find somebody to teach you shamatha. Let's say shamatha, or why don't we say shamatha without signs. So we know from the outside that we're talking about a person who's in a dream, but that person doesn't know. That person says, this is just what's happening, dude. Right? So in the midst of what we're calling from the outside, this non-lucid dream, and he's saying, what? This is just what's happening. Imagine this person in the midst of the non-lucid dream withdrawing his attention, let's say as a man, withdrawing his attention from all appearances, drawing the awareness right in upon awareness itself, and achieving shamatha. What's going to happen? The dream will vanish, and what will happen? The dream will vanish, and it will rest in the substrate consciousness. I don't know why he would wake up. Unless somebody said, hey, you, wake up. No, he would. But that's exactly it. The dream would vanish because he's taking away all of his awareness away from the dreamscape, bringing it all into the nature of mental awareness, and then the mental awareness drops into the substrate consciousness, and there he is. He's achieved shamatha, and he just slipped into the substrate consciousness. So then imagine he comes out, and he's right back in his non-lucid dream, but now he's got a very supple, very buoyant mind, stable, clear, supple. And he comes back to the teacher and said, hey, that was very cool. What else do you have? You know? Like, what can I do now that I have achieved this wonderful stability and vividness of attention? And imagine then that the teacher then gives him teachings in Vipassana. Teachings in Vipassana. And guides him in the careful, it's really an ontological analysis, dundambejepa, really probing into the very nature of all these appearances that he's saying, the nature of appearances of the objective appearances of the dreamscape, the nature of his dreaming mind. Because bear in mind, you think that's your mind, of the persona that you are in the dream. You'll think that's your mind. And so imagine this Vipassana master then teaches you to ultimately investigate the nature of your mind, your little mind of this person in the dream, and all appearances to the mind, all the dreamscape, the dream appearances. And imagine that you're a very good meditator and you probe into this and you realize that, whoa, there's nothing from the objects that is inherently there by its own intrinsic nature. That all these appearances to all the senses, all the six senses, they're all empty. And you probe into the nature of the mind that is experiencing all these appearances, and you see this mind, what we would call your little dreaming mind or dreamed mind, the mind of the person in the dream, you see that's empty too. So imagine within this non-lucid dream, you really get it. All these phenomena are empty. Maybe you develop some paranormal abilities. And just by conceptually designating the phenomena in the dream differently, you start to alter the dreamscape. By conceptually realizing the emptiness of these, what we call the dream phenomena, you simply call reality, you're actually able to start shifting, like the great Madhyamika masters of the past have been able to do. And then the master tells you, when you come out of your realization of emptiness, all these phenomena are dreamlike. And of course you're dreaming, but you don't know that. But your Vipassana master tells you, yes, very good, you've realized the empty nature of all the appearances, you've realized the empty nature of your mind that apprehends all these appearances, and now in between session, realize the dreamlike nature of all these phenomena. And you really get it. Wow, this is really like a dream. This is an awful lot like a dream. We're laughing from the outside because we know the poor schmuck is dreaming, you know, but he doesn't know he's dreaming. But as far as he's concerned, this is just what's happening. This is reality. And then imagine this person says, well, that was very good. Is there anything more? And then he encounters the Dzogchen teacher. And the Dzogchen teacher gives him pointing out instructions. And he says, this is not like a dream. This is a dream. And break through and realize that it is your awareness that has created all of this. And then suddenly you become what? Lucid. You recognize the dream as the dream, and you're no longer operating out of the coarse mind of the dreamed person. You're no longer locked into thinking this is it. You're now looking at the whole field of yourself, the dreamed persona, the whole dreamscape. You're looking at it now all from an utterly, radically different perspective. And that is, you are awake. And you realize this is a dream and you are the dreamer. At the same time, you also recognize this is the dream persona that has taken on this particular form. But you become lucid. So it's clear, I hope, that you could realize the emptiness of all the appearances in the dream and realize the emptiness of the mind of the dreamed person and still not know you're dreaming. But then you get the pointing out instructions and then you become lucid and say, oh, and immediately this bliss arises. Oh, this is a dream. And suddenly, in a snap, you can start flying and walking through walls and all kinds of things because you really have realized this is a dream, which means you're operating from an entirely different perspective. Right. It is possible to realize the emptiness of appearances in the dream, the emptiness of your mind within the dream, without knowing you're dreaming. But if you're lucid, if you've really realized this is a dream, there's no way you could still grasp onto the inherent existence of objects in the dream, and there's no way you would still grasp onto the mind of yourself as the dream person as inherently real. Because you've seen through the whole thing, right? If you know you're, and those of you who've had lucid dreams, you know, you see that these appearances are not objectively real. They appear to be, and they're not. And yourself as a subject appears to be subjectively real and is not. So if you've realized emptiness, you've not necessarily realized Rigpa. You've not necessarily become lucid in the waking state. But if you've become lucid in the waking state, you have necessarily realized emptiness. So in short then, this one simple, incredibly simple practice may do simply what it's designed to do for people, let's say, of dull faculties. This may actually just lead to shamatha. So don't complain. You know? That's what it was designed to do. If you're a person of sharp faculties, this practice, as you're probing right in upon the nature of this mind to see if there is a mind in here that is inherently real, independently of conceptual designation, you may fathom the emptiness of that mind existing from its own side and realize the ultimate nature of the mind. In which case, you are really setting out on the path of freedom. Or, as Padmasambhava suggests, you may actually simply realize Rigpa. If you are a person not of medium capacity to realize emptiness, but a person of very sharp faculties, or to realize actually Rigpa itself. So, that's a little bit of an overview. So often nowadays, people from multiple traditions, the modern Vipassana movement, the Zen tradition, and frankly the Tibetan tradition, pretty much across the boards, I don't know, often the teachings are as if we're all of exceptionally brilliant faculties. As if everybody's receiving, like as if they're teaching to us, as if we're all of extremely sharp faculties. As if, why mess around with shamatha? That's for people of dull faculties. Well, why don't we just cruise quickly through the actual Vipassana practice, you know, if you're doing Vajrayana, and let's just go directly to Vajrayana and to Dzogchen. If we were all of extremely sharp faculties, then just skipping shamatha, and maybe not doing much with Vipassana and going directly to stage regeneration, completion, and Dzogchen might work. But we may not be of, we may not all be of exceptionally sharp faculties. Just a possibility. In which case, shamatha is still indispensable. That was long. Let's jump into the practice. Let's do it. Let's settle the body in its natural state and the respiration in its natural rhythm. And for a little while, direct your awareness to the space of the body and the sensations of the in and out flow of the breath in any of the three ways of your choice. and gently calm the obsessive and compulsive flow of thought. And let your eyes be at least partially open. And cast your gaze downwards, resting the eyes. Letting your gaze be soft and relaxed, utterly at ease. Now rest your awareness in its natural state, its own character, its innate luminosity, without modifying it, without directing it, without seeking to transform it in any way. Just let it be. Simply rest your awareness without doing anything. rest your awareness without distraction, without grasping, and without taking anything as an object. Just rest in the natural luminosity of your own awareness. And now begin the oscillation, either in conjunction with the rhythm of the breath or independently of that rhythm, if you can, and still sustain the flow of mindfulness. Withdraw your awareness right in upon itself as you arouse, focus, concentrate your attention. And release your awareness into space. Sustaining the flow of awareness all the way through the inversion and the release. Now, as you invert your attention, engage in a penetrating probe, posing the question, what is it, experientially, what is it that is inverting and releasing the awareness? Invert your awareness right in upon that which appears to you in terms of your own experience to be controlling the attention. If your sense is that it is your mind that is releasing and inverting the attention, then probe with great clarity, precision, with a penetrating quality. Probe into the very nature of the mind. Again, not as an object of rumination or speculation or cogitation, but probe right into your very experience of the referent of the word, my mind. Seek out your mind and identify its nature. bring the session to a close. So, this method, according to Padmasambhava, Vinchen Rinpoche, so many other great teachers, is presented as a shamatha practice. But if you look at one of the great classics of the Dzogchen tradition in the Tibetan Tibetan Buddhism, called The Flight of the Garuda, it's a classic. I received the oral transmission on this, an explanation from Yangtan Rinpoche, an accomplished Dzogchen master himself. If you look into this text, and you see his instructions about actual Dzogchen meditation, it looks a lot very similar to this. Very similar to probing right in upon the nature of that which is aware, and probing and probing and probing. And it's not presented as shamatha, it's presented as Dzogchen. So this first phase of bona fide Dzogchen practice is called tekche. Tekche. Tek means something that's hard, brittle, hard to penetrate, and che means to cut. To break through that which is brittle, unwieldy, blockage. And what you're breaking through, according to Garab Dorje or Prahevatra, it's very clear. What are you breaking through? The substrate consciousness. He said, first ascertain the alaya, and then you go to vipassana, and then you go to Dzogchen. What are you breaking through? The alaya. You're not breaking through the psyche, the coarse mind. You don't need Dzogchen for that. You don't need Vipassana for that. All you need is shamatha to break through the coarse mind. That gets you to the subtle mind. You just broke through. You just broke through the desire realm. So you don't need Dzogchen to break through out of the desire realm, for heaven's sakes, right? But he's presenting this, that is, the author of The Flight of the Garuda is presenting this method as a textured method, which implies then, of course, that you've already achieved shamatha. But again, this one method may do double duty. It may allow you to achieve shamatha and then break through the substrate consciousness to rikpa. So it's really quite a very simple and extraordinary practice. On the one hand, we have this bona fide Dzogchen, and then there's another Dzogchen meditation, rikpa choksha, which I've alluded to earlier, open presence. Not a literal translation, but a very nice one, where there's no withdrawal into the substrate consciousness. And so practicing open presence, will you achieve shamatha? I think never. You could practice for 1,000 years very well, but your awareness is open. It's not coming out of the desire realm. It's attending to, equally, all the appearances arising to the mind. So will you achieve shamatha? I don't see how you would. It's not designed to achieve shamatha, so why would you think it would, right? Is it possible that a person could just practice open presence and realize rikpa? I can't say no. After all, there are these extremely gifted that might do just that, and they might. Who knows? I can't say. But I do know that this practice of rikpa choksha, this open presence, is designed for people who have already ascertained rikpa. They've received it by pointing out instructions. Or they've ascertained it in some way or another, and having ascertained rikpa, then they sustain that flow of the non-dual identification of rikpa in this open presence, this practice of utterly, profoundly not doing. Or Dujom Lingpa has the title of one of his great texts called Magom Sangye, Buddhahood without meditation, just not doing, radical not doing. If you've already ascertained rikpa, then you rest in that radical not doing and you just sustain it, simply sustain that flow of awareness of rikpa until you become Vidyadhara, and you may continue on from there. What happens a lot nowadays is that people hear about this open presence, and of course they really like it. What's not to like? And they look at that compared to shamatha, which is hard work. Compared to vipassana, that's hard work. And then learning the Dzogchen view, that's hard work. Radically transforming your whole lifestyle in accordance with the Dzogchen way of life, that's hard work. Who likes hard work? Who likes the idea of Buddhahood without having to meditate? My hand went up. I guess I'm the only one here. but two, okay, of three at least. How would you like to achieve Buddhahood without doing any meditation at all? Just open presence. Well, open presence without a really solid foundation of ethics, without powerful renunciation, without embracing and immersing your mind in the Dzogchen view, radically transforming lifestyle to accord with the Dzogchen way of life in terms of Da Gong Zhi, the view, meditation, and way of life, throwing out all the other things, not having ascertained Rigpa, and just saying, I don't want any of that, what do they call it? Claptrap. All that claptrap, all the other stuff. I don't need all that stuff. I just want essential Dzogchen. I just want to do open presence. You can. With no shamatha, with no vipassana, with no Dzogchen view, no renunciation, you can practice open presence. You may, why not? There's a name for that kind of practice. You know it's not going to be too nice. Chiwi-chi. Yeah, it's the marmot dharma. The marmot, marmote in Spanish, I think it is. Marmot, yeah, the little mountain rodent. It's a rodent that lives at high altitude. And what does it do after the long winter hibernation? It comes out on a nice warm rock with the sun beaming down, and it sits there and it goes, I'm practicing Dzogchen. I don't need Dzogchen view. I don't need renunciation. Shamatha, I don't know anything about shamatha, but I can certainly practice open presence. And it's very relaxing. This is even better than a massage. So, if you want to accrue karma to be reborn as a marmot, then practice open presence with no context at all. Who needs context, after all, if what you really want to do is achieve rebirth as a marmot? If you'd like to follow the path to liberation, then ethics, samadhi, wisdom, samadhi, vipassana, tekchut, tutgel, shamatha, bodhicitta, vipassana, stage regeneration, completion, might be a better idea. So we're very late, but sometimes I run on. You know that by now. See you this afternoon.